My name is Maureen. I'm going to be reading the November 7th, 2024 edition of the Iroquois Times Republic. The leading headline is titled Election 2024. With voter turnout at 73.54%, Iroquois County residents cast votes in the November 4th general election. County Clerk Brianne Suver said while she was hoping for a little higher voter turnout, the day went well. Everything went pretty smooth, she said. A few factors we changed for this election. In my older and wiser years, I start worrying about everything. One of those things I really worried about this election, which I should worry about more, is security and making sure we had power if our power went out. Then, with the weather that was predicted to happen, I wanted to make sure we had a plan in place. I worked with the sheriff, EMA Director Scott Anderson, and Clef Glenn of MABAS. I can't tell you how phenomenal they are, especially Jeff Glenn. That guy puts a lot of time in. He made all my worries go away. We are not hooked up on a generator here. He brought a giant generator, all the cords, figured out the plan to make sure my office was able to run, that we had lights, that we would be okay if something happened. Scott put together an emergency action plan for us for the different polling places. Clint had all information for all of his deputies should they have to be called out to a polling place. He actually had a deputy stationed here tonight just in case we needed anything. That was one part of the election that we changed what we were doing, and it just worked out so well. For other things, with our new devices, we have less issues that the judges have through the day. I feel like our end of the night is going a lot quicker. We had all precincts out of here by 9:30. Really pleased with how the new devices are working. There were three advisory questions on the ballot at the state level and one at the county level. At the county level, the county board asked about whether residents wanted to separate from Cook County. The votes cast were 9,129 for yes and 3,403 for no. The first advisory question at the state level was in regard to candidates interfering with election workers' official duties. The yes votes were 10,908 and the no votes were 1,714. The second advisory question was to create an additional tax on income greater than $1 million. The yes votes were 6,130 and the no votes were just above that at 6,524. The third advisory question was in regard to health insurance plans in Illinois that provide coverage for pregnancy benefits. Yes votes were higher at 7,492 and no votes were at 5,090. For President and Vice President of the United States, Harris Walls team, 2,742. Trump Vance team, 10,364. There were 184 votes for Kennedy and Shanahan and various other candidates received a couple. For representative in Congress, 2nd Congressional District, Robin Kelly received 2,710. Ashley Ramos, 10,280. For state senator, 53rd legislative district, unexpired term, there was only one candidate at Chris Belkema, 11,671 votes. The other uncontested candidates were circuit clerk Lisa Hines, state's attorney Michael Quinlan, coroner William Cheatham. County Board, Lyle Behrens and Chad McGinnis. District 2, Jed Whitlow, Jody Musterson, County Board District 2, second one, Kathleen Perkinson, and District 3, Raymond Williams, Jamie Lee Bacon, might be Bacon. County Board District 4, Scott Watts, Roger Bard. For the Judge of the Appellate Court, to fill the vacancy of Honorable Tom Litton, John Anderson received 2,796 and Kenton Skarin received 9,839. For judge of the appellate court, to fill Mary O'Brien, Linda Davenport received 2,708 and Jason Helland 9,899. Judge of appellate court, 3rd Judicial District, to fill the Honorable Daniel Schmidt, Lance Peterson received 2,571 and John Costello received 10,005. Appellate court judge Holdridge was voted yes, 8,978, and noes, 1,960. Circuit Court Judge Cunnington, yes, 9,112, no, 1,844. Concord Fire, yes, was 128, no, was 114. The next headline article is titled Iroquois West School District Students Learn About Opera. Opera for the Young presented The Magic Flute to elementary students in Gilman and Thawville on November 1st. The program is a live professional opera that includes students in the performances. The company is a 501c3 nonprofit and rotates which operas performed in schools each year. The performances rotate every 9 years. Next year's opera will be Elixir of Love. Parents, community members, and other students were treated to the performances at the schools. The Magic Flute is from Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's Die Zauberflöte. Pardon my pronunciation of that. The performance has been adapted for students and is performed in English. In the story, Prince Tamino goes on a quest to find Princess Pamina. Along the way, he meets Papagino, the Birdman. Chorus of students from the school aids Prince Tamino along the way as they encounter the Queen of the Night and the Three-Headed Lady. Students asked questions of the opera for the young performers, and the performers talked about how they practiced their parts. The music teacher, Brenda Munch, said the Opera for the Young performances provide a new experience for many of the students. Often our students are not going to get to see a live music performance in Iroquois County. We only have one opera, also done by Sugar Creek Opera, who helps pay for this. This is a great exposure for them to get to see what a live performance sounds like and also to see an opera, because honestly, most of our students are never going to see one outside of this. She said at the beginning of the school year, Opera for the Young contacts the school and sends the music. We start practicing, she said. Here we do practice. It is at the entire school. Every kid in the audience was singing along with the kids at the front. That's because I teach the music to everybody so they can know what's going on. We practice for a couple months, then they show up one day. They practice once with the kids, and then we do the show. She said the schools could not have such a performance without the support of Sugar Creek Opera. The performances have happened for several years. The third and final headline article reads, Iroquois County burn ban officially lifted as of November 4th. The Eastern Illinois Mutual Aid Fire Association, which is comprised of all 21 fire departments located in Iroquois County, County Board Chairman John Shore, and the entire Iroquois County Board and the Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency formally announced that the countywide burn ban was officially lifted as of November 4th. Recent rainfall has provided enough moisture to safely remove the burning restriction, Iroquois County Emergency Management Agency Coordinator Scott Anderson said in a news release. Ashcombe Fire Chief Jeff Glenn, who is also the resident of the Eastern Illinois Mutual Aid Fire Association, reached out to me this morning and formally lifted the countywide burn ban that's been in place since early October. Chief Glenn also wanted me to remind all that may choose to have any type of open fire in the future to use extreme caution, do not burn when it's windy, and to always have an extinguishing method close at hand. You should also follow any local ordinances that specify burning times and dates, as well as the materials you are allowed to burn. from all the Iroquois County Fire Chiefs, County Board Chairman John Shore, and the members of the County Board, as well as myself, we would like to thank everyone for following the ban while it was in place. It certainly reduced the possibility of large out-of-control fires due to the extreme dry conditions and high winds, therefore keeping our first responders safe and uninvolved property free from unexpected damage. The annual meeting of Iroquois County Genealogical Society took place November 2nd in the Victorian Room of the Old Courthouse Museum. The annual report was read. Since the last annual meeting in 2023, 4 new life members, 3 new annual memberships, and 14 membership renewals have been accepted. The nominating committee, made up of Ginny Lee and Sue McHugh, presented its slate. Eileen Burns for president, Jennifer Hendry for vice president, Ginny Lee as director, and Connie Black as a director to fill a vacancy. These nominations stood and will be seated in their respective positions. The annual treasurer's report was discussed and accepted. A tentative schedule of events for 2025 was presented. January will feature a program Across the Miles. The activities for the remainder of the months have been decided. After the meeting, Mary Burr presented a program on Sanborn maps. The museum currently has one volume which features maps of many towns in Iroquois County on canvas pages. Sanborn insurance maps can help those researching their family trees, as the map showed where everything was located. You can easily see a Sanborn map to see what churches or businesses may have been located in the town where your ancestors lived. Fire departments could use these maps when a fire broke out so they could tell at a glance where the home was located, the type of materials it was made of, and what the buildings surrounding it were made of. The basic key code was red for homes made of brick, blue for buildings made of stone, gray for structures made of iron, yellow for structures having a wood frame, and brown for buildings deemed to be fireproof. Sanborn maps were drawn to scale, with most being 1 inch equal to 50 feet. Each page was mounted on canvas and bound into volume. Sanborn maps included a lot of information about the villages and towns included in the volume: road names, street numbers, construction materials, building size, location of fire hydrants, names of businesses and churches, and location of the building on each lot were included. Fire departments and fire insurance companies depended on these maps to know what was adjacent to buildings and the risk of fire. If you would like to start the search of your family history, this is a great place to start. ICGS is located on the first floor of the old courthouse museum. Membership in ICGS is available as an individual annual membership, a life membership paid in 4 payments, or as a life membership paid in full. Story titled, Farm Community Rallies Around Injured Friend Shares Message of Road Safety. Willie Van Wassenhove, a Kankakee County farmer and a newlywed of 6 months, pulled his truck and hay rack over to the side of the road when he noticed a couple of bales rocking, and then his life forever changed. While he was standing between the truck bed and hay rack, a vehicle rear-ended the wagon, pinning him and crushing his legs, according to a fire official on the scene. He has had 12 surgeries as of October 23rd, including the amputation of his right leg near the knee. One of his latest procedures was to address a blood clot on his lung. He remains at the University of Chicago Medical Center battling persistent infections, with no idea when he'll be able to go home. We've been through a lot, said his wife Lisa, who remains by his side and uses Facebook to keep friends and family posted each step of the way. We have a huge community helping us, she said. Family, friends, and neighbors are doing hog chores, moving hay, selling pork, and raising money to help with hospital expenses. People in their community tell her this is their way of giving back to a family who's always been willing to help others. The couple has been together for almost 11 years, but just officially tied the knot this spring. Their happy memories of a beautiful wedding on March 16th helped them as they struggle with their new reality. He hopes to eventually be fitted for a prosthetic leg, but will also have a very long road to recovery. He has started physical therapy to strengthen his upper body, and when ready, he will move to the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab in Chicago. The priority of his family and friends is to help take care of the daily tasks on the farm until he recovers, but they are also prioritizing sharing the importance of road safety and awareness of farm vehicles. Van Wassenhove was parked on the side of the road with flashers on and displayed a slow-moving vehicle sign when the vehicle crashed into him from behind. This accident is a prime example of the importance of farm safety awareness and has impacted families across Illinois and all the way to Kansas, said Haley Cole, a youth he inspired through his volunteer work with livestock. Willie has played a monumental role in my livestock show career and has been a great selfless role model to look up to, said Cole, an Illinois Farm Bureau young leader who wanted to do something to help the farmer who was inducted into the Illinois 4-H Hall of Fame in 2023. So she designed a t-shirt featuring an orange slow-moving vehicle sign with the words, "Save a Farmer and Slow Down." Willie, that's on the back, and Willie Strong on the front. She is selling them online at stores, inksoft.com. Many people know the Kankakee County Farm Bureau member who raises and breeds Berkshire hogs, has a hay business, and sells pork because Van Wassenhove was also so active in the dairy and pork industry. He assists youth with their projects across Illinois, is the Kankakee County Fair Livestock Auction Committee Chair, and co-superintendent of the Swine Barn. During the Illinois State Fair, he can be found volunteering to serve ice cream near the butter cow in the dairy building. With the support of the 4-H and farming communities, such as Cabri, Campus, Cullum, Hersher, Kempton, and Ashcombe, Chabance, and Clifton. On October 25th, Delta Dental of Illinois Foundation's Land of Smiles wrapped up its fall tour in Iroquois County, reaching 130 pre-kindergarten through third grade students. According to information from the foundation, Land of Smiles is a free interactive show about oral hygiene, nutrition, regular dental checkups, featuring characters like Captain Supergrin, Terry Tooth Fairy, Toothpick, and their playful nemesis, Kaz Cavity. Land of Smiles captivates young audiences while teaching them how to keep their smiles healthy and cavity-free. Tooth decay remains the leading chronic disease affecting children. Research shows that 22% of Illinois third graders have untreated tooth decay. In a steadfast effort to address and curb tooth decay among children, Delta Dental of Illinois Foundation's Free Land of Smiles program tours twice a year. This fall, Land of Smiles is reaching over 21,000 students at nearly 100 schools. Every student at a Land of Smiles performance receives a free oral health kit with a toothbrush, toothpaste, and floss, along with bilingual oral health tips outlining how students should care for their teeth. The Land of Smiles program is a testament to Delta Dental of Illinois. Over the past 14 years, the program has reached over 570,000 students at more than 1,030 Illinois elementary schools. To learn more about the Land of Smiles program, download K-3 Oral Health Educational Resources or request a school performance. The 8th Annual Hope for the Holidays Benefit Craft Show will be from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. November 16th. The event will be at Chabance Civic Center. Homemade soup will be served for lunch. There will be a bake sale, mimosas, and Bloody Marys to be available for purchase. Donovan School District is planning its Senior Citizens Dinner on December 7th at the elementary school at noon. Senior citizens in the Donovan School District are invited to attend the meal provided by the kitchen staff. Milford FFA students attend National Convention. From October 22nd to the 26th, 12 FFA members from the Milford chapter attended National Convention in Indianapolis. Throughout the week, the FFA members visited the expo hall, workshops, and sessions each day before their afternoon outing. On Wednesday, they attended the Megan Maroney concert. On Thursday, the members went to Arcade, Combat Ops Entertainment, and a fancy dinner at the Old Spaghetti Factory. On Friday, members attended the rodeo, and Saturday headed back home. Members had a blast throughout the week and wish it never ended. There are two obituaries in this paper. The first is Patricia Patsy Maviti, M-A-V-I-T-Y, 81 years of age, of Huron, South Dakota, passed away October 28th in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Visitation was held on November 3rd at the Cooler Funeral Home. Service was Monday, November 4th at Riverview United Methodist Church. Burial will be in the Restlawn Memory Garden Cemetery in Huron. Memorials may be directed to the Riverview United Methodist Church. Debbie A. Baltes, B-A-L-T-E-S, 63 years of age, of Rensselaer, passed away unexpectedly Sunday evening on November 3rd at Great Lakes Healthcare Center in Dyer. Friends are invited to visit with the family on Friday, November 8th from 3 p.m. until time of funeral at 5 p.m. at Stenke Funeral Home of Rensselaer. Private interment will take place at Western Cemetery. Stenke Funeral Home is honored to be handling the arrangements. Major General R. Dale Lyles will retire from his role leading the Indiana National Guard in January, Governor Eric Holcomb's office announced Monday. That is also when the state's next governor is scheduled to take office. Holcomb is term limited. Serving as adjutant general has been the honor of my life, and I'm grateful to Governor Holcomb and the women and men who proudly serve our fellow Hoosiers in the Indiana National Guard for the privilege of leading this dynamic team. He has led the Guard since 2019. Whenever disaster struck or duty called, General Lyles and our trained and ready Hoosier Guardsmen leapt into action and met every moment in stride. It was on his watch and because of his focused leadership that we simultaneously modernized and mobilized the Indiana National Guard here, at home and abroad, said Holcomb. Over the last 5 years, the news release notes, the Guard has met its assigned federal missions, responding to an increasing number of state and local missions, boosted talent attraction and retention, and invested in its armories and more. While leading Indiana's forces, Lyles also worked on national recruitment and retention. He graduated from Indiana Military Academy in 1994 and earned his commission. He served in the Indiana Army National Guard for decades, including post-9/11 deployments to Bosnia and Afghanistan. The next governor will appoint Lyles' successor. Indiana has about 12,000 Guard soldiers and airmen that can assist in domestic operations like relief efforts following severe weather, but are also trained for federal operations, including overseas developments. The Guard also operates Army National Guard armories and units across the state, training facilities at Camp Atterbury and Muscatatuck Urban Training Center, and Air National Guard wings in Fort Wayne and Terre Haute. A record number of Hoosier students have joined Indiana's 21st Century Scholars Program, more than doubling enrollment for the 27-28 cohorts, the Indiana Commission for Higher Education announced October 31st. More than 90,000 students have joined the program, a statewide grant program that funds lower-income student attendance at 2- and 4-year schools. After 2023 law allowed qualifying students to be automatically enrolled. This legislative change has allowed us to realize the ideals of the 21st Century Scholars Program even more fully. The promise that if your family is low income but you work hard at school, you can also attain debt-free college education, secure a better life for your family and yourself, said Representative Earl Harris of East Chicago. In the 2028 cohort, more than 50,000 students were initially enrolled, according to CHE. Nearly 46,000 students have additionally enrolled in the 2027 cohort. The Scholarship Fund, created in 1990, covers full tuition and fees at Indiana colleges and universities for low-income students who enroll in the eighth grade. Lawmakers will have to find the scholarships in future budgets. Students who are income eligible for the National School Lunch Program are automatically enrolled in 21st Century Scholars. They must still meet subsequent retirements requirements, but can opt out at any time. Scholars had an 81% graduation rate in 2021 compared to 30% of their non-scholar low-income peers. More than 50,000 collegiate degrees have been earned by recipients since the program's inception. Harris's statement stated, as the 2027-28 program cohorts move toward high school graduation and college enrollment, I can't wait to see what these students do in their careers and in our state. The success of 21st Century Scholars shows us that closing the achievement gap for low-income and minority students is possible if the state and state legislature are willing to get it done. I look forward to working on more bipartisan, common-sense education solutions for our state. Article titled, Indiana Supreme Court Case Mulls Whether Counties Can Strip Health Insurance from Elected Officials. Are elected officials entitled to health insurance regardless of the number of hours they work? That question is before the Indiana Supreme Court, who heard arguments in a Perry County case Thursday that could have statewide implications for local officials. The case began after the Perry County Commissioners discontinued health insurance coverage for certain part-time county employees in 2023. A Perry County councilman, Keith Huck, sued and sought an injunction to keep his insurance. He works about 9 hours a month, according to evidence in the case. A local judge granted Huck's injunction, but the Indiana Court of Appeals disagreed. The appeal to the Indiana Supreme Court is interlocutory, meaning it is occurring while the case is ongoing. This court should declare that local unit elected officials who work less than 30 hours a week should be part-time employees for purposes of group health benefits, said Attorney Maggie Smith, representing Perry County. Exempting all local unit elected officials from being considered part-time employees will have such a drastic fiscal impact on the public's fiscal state that such an exemption should be the result of a public policy decision of the legislature, and that has not happened yet. She argued that state law gives local units the right to not offer health insurance to part-time employees, and that's what Perry County did when facing a fiscal crisis. The decision impacted 12 of 21 local elected officials they deemed part-time, including the Perry County Commissioners, who made the decision. Indiana Supreme Court Chief Justice Loretta Rush pointed out that state law says elected county officials who are not required to report hours and can't determine or change compensation based on the number of hours worked. As Republican state lawmakers applaud a new report showing that for the first time Indiana's average annual teacher pay exceeded $60,000, Democratic leaders continue to push for a state salary minimum that would ensure all educators make at least that much from day one. The average teacher salary in Indiana during the last school year was recorded at $60,556. The lowest teacher salary reported was $40,000, the current state-mandated minimum. The highest was $110,000. Teacher pay is ultimately set by local school districts. 98% of Hoosier school districts gave teachers a raise last year, benefiting about 92% of educators statewide. Indiana's newest teachers, those with just 1 year of experience, averaged $48,129 per year. By 5 years of experience, it was $52,268. With 30 or more years' experience, the pay increases to $78,613. Hoosier lawmakers will craft the state's next two-year budget during the upcoming 2025 legislative session. This concludes reading this week's paper. Enjoy that, and thank you so much for listening to the Iroquois County Times-Republic.